This is LA's home for the Dodgers.
Somehow makes the play.
And you're listening to Off-Season Dodger Talk.
He bobbles it, falls face first, somehow picks it up, throws behind his back with his face in the dirt, throw to first base to Gonzalez and makes the play.
Call 866-987-2570 and talk to your host, David Massey.
Get out of here, Petros. You're late for dinner. Come on. Jeez. Sorry about that. Jeez. It's hard to get Petros some money out of here. They love staying after 7 o'clock just talking to me. Great interview with the head coach of the L.A. Chargers. Lynn, I think his name was. Yeah. Sorry, no crosstalk, Petros. You got to get out of here. Money, out, out. I know you guys like to hang out late. Not tonight. It's time for Dodger Talk, which, by the way, you got it to me a little bit late, 7:04. The people of Los Angeles want Dodger Talk right at 7 o'clock, but I'll give you guys a pass tonight anyway. All right, they're out. So now we can start the show. And yes, I still have the remnants of laryngitis. And you heard Petros say, I might give you some home remedies. I will tell you this. I've never had laryngitis in my life. And I thought it was just losing your voice. It's the completely opposite thing. Plus, very painful. Well, I mean, you do lose your voice. But also, too, every time you swallow, it feels like you're swallowing sharp pieces of glass. So here's my remedy if you ever get it. Apple cider vinegar, honey, and a half glass of water. It'll work perfectly. So what's so funny, Ronnie? What's so funny? Yeah, I do have laryngitis, and not only do you lose your voice, it's very painful. I never knew that. I never experienced it before, and I'm glad you're laughing at my pain. Anyway, Jeff Kent is going to join us in 10 minutes in our next segment. As you know, if you listen to the show, I am a huge proponent of him being in the Hall of Fame. This guy has done enough in his career to warrant, at the very least, more than 15% of the vote that he got last year. For his career, he hit .290 and had a slugging percentage of .500. He's a five-time All-Star, an MVP in 2000. He has the most home runs by any second baseman in history, 377. He has the eighth highest OPS of any second baseman in the history of the game. And I could go on and on and on. This guy, for 9 straight years, was the premier offensive second baseman of his generation and arguably maybe the best offensive second baseman since the post-expansion era of the 60s. Now, I know a lot of people, when they want to argue that he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, point to his defense. Well, I got news for you. If his defense was so bad, they would have moved him somewhere else. His offense outweighed his defense, and he wasn't a bad infielder. His range was limited, but he didn't boot balls that were right at him. He was limited. And I'm not going to sell him as this defensive wizard, but I think he meant more to his teams offensively to warrant, at the very least, more than 15% of the vote he got last year and what he's trending at right now. Also, later in the show, you'll hear from Dodger President of Baseball Operations, Andrew Friedman. Plus, we'll be giving away a pair of tickets to Inside the Locker Room with Petros and Money, who their special guest will be on January 26th, Justin Turner. He will be brought to you by the official seasoning of the Dodgers, Chef Marito, featuring meat, fish, and chicken seasonings. Fire up the grill. The chef is yours. Keep listening to win your way in at AM570LASports.com and also here on AM570LASports over the air and the iHeartRadio app. By the way, it will be between 5 and 6 o'clock that Justin Turner will be inside the locker room on Thursday, January 26th. Speaking of Justin Turner, I was at the press conference on Wednesday, and I appreciate Justin announcing to everybody in the room that I was sick, so nobody would even get 10 feet next to me. So I appreciate him doing that. But also, too, I thought he gave some very interesting answers. And one of the things that I think he wanted to point out was he was not just automatically coming back to the Dodgers, and not because he didn't want to come back, but I think it's a little bit of an insult when he hears people insinuate that he was coming back to the Dodgers because nobody else really had that much interest. And that was a narrative that we heard during the process, that the market was not as robust for Justin Turner as a lot of people thought it would be going into free agency. And I think he took exception with it because he did reference Buster Olney's column from earlier in the week a couple of times in that press conference, and actually texted me about it. And I said, I don't know where he would get that, because even if you, when you are a free agent, you can't work out at the stadium. It's not part of the rules. You're not allowed in the stadium when you're not a member of the team. So here's what Justin Turner said on Wednesday at the press conference when he was talking about what he decided to do during free agency and the process of free agency. And on top of what he said about getting some offers from other teams, I thought it was interesting to hear, too, how hard he worked and where he was, and appreciating where he is now getting that type of contract from where he was when he first started with the Dodgers. Here's a guy that was looked upon sideways to replace two very popular players on the field and in the clubhouse, and Nick Punto and Skip Schumacher. And he needed to prove himself. And I don't think he felt comfortable until he got a chance to play when Juan Uribe got hurt in New York back in 2014. So here's what Justin said about the process of free agency.
Yeah, I mean, I read the same thing, that I didn't clean out my locker and I was still working out here with Brandon, but that wasn't the case. I think Kenley and I actually cleaned out our lockers probably the same day and headed out of here. But getting to free agency is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. You know, it's so hard to get there for guys, and you do want to explore and you do want to see the other options. But obviously my experience here with the Dodgers had a pretty big weight on it, and making that decision and what was going to happen. So it's nice to be courted, it's nice to be desired by other teams, and in the end of the day, you know, I'm happy that I'm right here and I get to put on the Dodger uniform again.
And that was Justin Turner on Wednesday, and he will be inside the locker room from 5 to 6 o'clock with Petros and Money on January 26th. Now, I don't have the kind of production dollars that Petros and Money have behind their show. One other piece of news that came out of that press conference was that Kenley Jansen said he will finally pay off his bet to me from 2 years ago when I told him the Golden State Warriors would run the table and win the NBA championship. The bet was Kenley would come in studio. He still hasn't done it, but he said on Wednesday that he promised he would come in studio next week and take your calls for an hour. So we'll see whether or not he delivers. But one guy that did deliver in his career and will deliver again tonight is Jeff Kent. He's next on Dodger Talk on AM 570 LA Sports.
This is the home of the Dodgers.
Call us, tweet us, tag us. It's 866-987-2570 or hashtag Dodger Talk.
David Basse, Nissan Dodger Talk until 8 o'clock tonight. Taking your phone calls at 866-987-2570. Pound Blue for our AT&T subscribers. Coming up in just a moment, Jeff Kent will join us. We're waiting for him to call in. And also a little bit later, you'll hear from Dodgers President of Baseball Operations, Andrew Friedman. Some news and notes surrounding the Dodgers today. They avoided arbitration with four players. Yasmani Grandal settled for reportedly $5.5 million. Alex Wood, $2.8 million. Luis Avila, $1.5 million. And Josh Fields for just a little bit more than $1 million. And Josh Fields is an interesting name because a lot of people think he may be one of the candidates to be the eighth inning setup man for Kenley Jansen. And I know the Dodgers were really high on him the second half of last year, so we'll see how that plays out. Also, too, the Dodgers traded Micah Johnson, who was designated for assignment earlier this week, to the Atlanta Braves for cash or a player to be named later. Gotta love that, right? All right, we'll get back to your phone calls in just a moment, but I'm really excited to have a man that I believe should be in the Hall of Fame and certainly get more than 15% of the vote by some of these guys that are voting for one of the most prestigious honors in all of sports. He was a five-time All-Star, the National League MVP in 2000, and has hit more home runs than any second baseman in the history of the game. That's former Dodger Jeff Kent. Jeff, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
When I was emailing with you, I was talking Pacific time because I was hoping that you did not leave the beaches of Huntington Beach, but I guess you did.
Yeah, we spent Christmas time out there in Newport and had a great time. Southern California got hit with about 2 days of rain.
Yeah.
We were right on the tail end of that, but I got to surf in Newport for about a day when the big waves came in because of that storm, and then headed off to the snow of Utah to go take my boy back to college.
Jeff, I, as you know, I'm a big advocate of yours as far as being in the Hall of Fame. When you look at what's going on with the lack of support that you're getting, nonetheless, not even getting the 75%, but the lack of the support, does it bother you, and can you pinpoint why?
It's such a mess, I think, with the Hall of Fame voting right now. You know, there's so many people arguing and debating about, the potential steroid era and the steroid guys on there. And then there's a few guys on there. Everybody's complaining and crying about, he was liked by the media and he wasn't liked by the media. And then you got, some players that, have had decent careers a short period of time. But, I really try not to get caught up in all the drama BS of what's going on and just let let everybody else talk the talk. And for me, I played my career. I had a great time playing. I loved playing baseball. I loved playing in L.A. in front of my parents the last few years of my career. And, there's nothing I can do about it. I can get myself all worked up about it. But, it's probably not going to help. So I don't hold a lot of weight in the words that I'm saying. But, as I get older, old guys, they get more of an opinion. So, my opinion's getting a little stronger and stronger, but I truly know there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why you're not getting more consideration, because you never were a self-promoter. And I think finally, this time around, more people are speaking up about you and maybe bringing more attention to your case.
Yeah, and I can appreciate that. Every time people talk about, my stats and my career, they keep bringing up this WAR number, which is such an arbitrary number. It's crazy that even happens, number one. And number two is, I've always thought that, great players, not just me, but any great players that played in baseball were compared to players in their era. And so much, I think, of Hall of Fame talk is about now comparing great players to the players that are already in the Hall of Fame. Well, those guys played, 15 and 30 years prior to the guys that are candidates right now. So I don't know what's happened in the Hall of Fame voting, because when I played, there were so many great Hall of Famers that I met that were great players. And the eras that they played in were great in their own right. But I think what Hall of Fame voters are doing now is they're discrediting players that are playing right now in this era. And I think it's unfair to compare players that are playing right now, this coming season, to players that played 20 years ago or 40 years ago. And for some reason, I think baseball's doing itself an injustice by trying to compare, just true Hall of Famers only rather than the best players in their era. And it's a shame, because I'm a fan now of the game. I wasn't really a big baseball fan when I played, but I'm a fan of the game now, and it's hard for me to believe that I'm watching great players that don't get the credit that they deserve for being the best in their era.
Does it disappoint you that more players, maybe from your generation and maybe even more now, are being judged on these stat lines that really don't really tell you what you're seeing with your own eyes about how good a player was? When I watched you play, you passed the eye test and the numbers back it up.
Yeah, and I think it's more fair to compare players with their numbers based on the era or the time frame that they played in. And I think it's completely unfair to you know, to judge players that play in the game now with players that played 30 years ago because the ballparks are different. I think the athletes are continuing to get bigger and better and stronger and smarter. I mean, we've got technology now in scouting reports that players have that give them the advantage unlike they had, you know, 20 and 30 years ago. And even in my career, in a 20-year career of mine, I saw the game evolve to levels that were just extraordinary, and I know it's not going to stop. Just as an example, I'm so proud of the Cubs and what they did, and I've got a lot of Cubs fans, older guys, that tell me that they're pulling for the Cubs, but quite a long time ago, I said the Cubs would never win until they stop playing day games and they build a better ballpark for their players. And that's what Theo did, exactly what he did. The first thing he did was he retrofitted that ballpark, made a better atmosphere for the kids. Those kids play at night and put a bunch of younger players in that on that team, and he built a winner. And, you know, that's how the baseball has developed itself, and that's how baseball is developing better players. And it's and again, going back to the argument, it's such a shame that they're comparing the Cubs now to the Cubs of 30 years ago, because they're so much different than they were 30 years ago.
Jeff Kent is our guest, and you know what? You were ahead of your time. You were trying to hint to a lot of different topics while you were playing, and maybe people didn't want to listen or just turned a blind eye to it. But even you said in 2008, when it came to the PED controversy, they should start doing some sort of blood testing. Well, here we are in 2017, and they're getting very close to that. At least they're doing some type of getting some bodily fluid from these guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's taken a while. I think if they would have come to their senses a long time ago, you know, maybe it would have been farther ahead. And I know, you know, baseball, and I applaud baseball for doing a great job of trying to create more of an even playing field for the players. And I knew it was getting out of hand. It was hard for not just me, but for a lot of players that knew that the unfairness was just the gap between, you know, the clean players and the not clean players were just getting so huge. And, you know, the game benefited from it. I don't think that necessarily the game, you know, turned a blind eye to it. But I just think that the game, you know, a long time ago should have done more. But now that it's, you know, moved along, I'm trying to pick my words easily right now. But I am grateful that the game is working with other, you know, businesses to try to figure out how to keep an even playing field. And I hope they keep it up.
Jeff, do you cringe when you see voters change their stance on Bonds and Clemens when everybody was such a staunch opponent of ever voting for them? Now they're getting 45% of the vote. Does that make you cringe?
You know, partly, but let me preface it with this. I was a teammate of Roger Clemens's, and he was a great teammate. He was a great player. I played against him when I was young in spring training, and he was a knee-shaking scary. I was shaking in my pants when I was facing that guy, and that was a long time ago. Barry Bonds, one of the best players I ever played with and ever saw play. You know, the cloud of uncertainty, the cloud of you know, cheat that's there, you know, it's a debate that'll never end. I've seen arguments on both sides. They both have validity to it, but you know, if the Hall of Fame is going to stand for something, then it needs to stand all the way, not half-ass. And I think that's it's debatable. That's why it's an arbitrary vote for some media people that, yeah, it's okay, I don't mind it. Or there's some that stand on their soapbox and say there's no way. So that's an arbitrary vote, and I think more so the Hall of Fame shouldn't be more an arbitrary decision for a lot of people. I really don't believe so, and I think baseball over the last few years, because there's been such a backlog of players that have, you know, possibly used performance enhancing drugs. There's been such a debate that I think baseball has really hurt its fan base because it hasn't recognized some of the best players that played in the game, even though it was in the steroid era. And for me to say Barry and Roger ought to be in, you know, I don't know. I'm a guy that really played with a lot of integrity. So you know, my emphasis is on the integral side and not necessarily on turning an eye to players that, you know, didn't do it the right way.
Yeah, and that's why I scratch my head even more, and especially when I see you getting just 15% last year. It seems like the writers are saying that they're trying to look for guys that did it the right way, yet you and Fred McGriff and Tim Raines struggle to get the votes, and yet those are the players that everybody proclaims they're looking for to vote for.
Yeah, and, you know, Freddie was a teammate of mine, actually, my rookie year when I was in Toronto. I thought Freddie was one of the best first basemen in the league for quite a while. And it's a shame that he isn't getting more recognition that he's getting. And Tim Raines, too. When I came in, Tim Raines was one of the old guys, and he was one of the best old guys for a long time. And I'm surprised that he hasn't gotten more recognition as well. And some of these younger players that have come in the game and have broken records, and there's a cloud of you know, undetermined knowledge if they did PEDs, and I don't know. There is a purity of the game that I think is being lost a little bit, and I think baseball is its fan base is hurting a little bit, because I think dads need to be bringing their kids to the Hall of Fame and telling stories about players that were great in the eras that the kids could possibly recognize, or even stories about players that, you know, are dead when the kid becomes a fan of the game. And I don't know, it's a shame to see as a fan, like I said, and then I keep repeating myself, that, you know, baseball doesn't recognize more of these great players and maybe loosen its belt a little bit for some of these great players that deserve to get in.
Jeff Kent is our guest, and you mentioned that you do watch the game and you're more of a fan than you used to be. Do you look at the game the same way as you did as a player, or you could never enjoy it that way?
It took me a few years to take my game face off. Well, you know, my wife got tired of me critiquing the game so much when I was watching it on TV. But, you know, I'm able to go out and work with some of the young kids in San Francisco for the Giants and Scottsdale in spring training, and kind of do a few things here and there with some players locally that, you know, may get drafted or going on to college. And I truly do now sit back as an older guy with, you know, gray hair now and a gray beard running, that the game is so different than it was when I played. And it's not worse. It's better. I mean, some of these young kids are awesome. They are creating, you know, great hustle out there in the field. Some of these pitchers that are playing, I think the storylines to some of these teams have been great. So I enjoy the game a heck of a lot more as a fan, and you know, hope baseball continues to, you know, be a leader for professional sports.
I don't want to take the attention away from you and everything that I believe that should happen for you, but since you did bring it up and you're a fan of the game, you were a second baseman. You had your back to the runner for your entire career. How do you feel about that new rule about the neighborhood play, about the double plays, all that? How do you feel about that now?
That was the most disappointing rule that I think has ever been magnified. There was already a rule in the game that if a runner going into second base can't reach the base with his hand, then it's an automatic out. You know, now on the owner's side, though, the owners are making the rules. On an owner's side, you don't want your second baseman to get taken out and be out for, you know, 6 weeks. And Alex Rodriguez came in. We were winning a game 7-0, and I was playing with San Francisco. A-Rod came in and took my knee out. He slid past the bag, took my knee out because I failed to get out of the way. And I was out 6 weeks. Now, as an owner, he doesn't want to see that. Now, as a player, I got no problem with somebody trying to take me out. However, you know, Chase Utley was the play that made it, and Chase is a great player too, second baseman. I guarantee you, in a couple more years after the game, he'll tell you that was way out of line what he did. However, you know, he should have been called out right away. He took the player out, but that's part of the game. It's part of the game that's being taken away from the players. And you know, I was adamant about all these guys wearing those big old elbow pads.
Yeah.
And it took that away from the pitchers being able to throw high and tight. That was the one thing that, for one of the first things Roger Clemens did when I was a rookie in spring training, he threw one ball right at my chin because I was leaning out over the fastball. You know, if I had one of those elbow pads, I could have stuck it up there and walked to first base like these guys do. And so there's a lot of, I think, as a player, some unfairness that's been taken away from the players a little bit that, I don't know. I think it's softening the game a little too much. Maybe I use that word lightly, though, but it is softening the game too much. And, you know, the elbow pads and the players not being able to take guys out. I don't know. I'd like to see more of it. And too many players, I think, don't go in there and try to destroy the second baseman or the shortstop, and they ought to do it more often.
I'm with you, Jeff. I said at the time, with all these different rule changes, taking away the contact at the plate and what they're doing at second base, it's a microcosm of our society where we're becoming way too politically correct, and that's the way not only baseball's going, but every sport.
Yeah, oh, heck yeah, it is. And I think this is one of many reasons, but part of the reason is these athletes are getting faster and stronger than ever before. And they're you got a guy running about 15 miles in the home plate, and he's taking somebody out blindside. You know, he's got about 250 pounds of muscle on him now, like nothing ever happened or like never before. So, you know, I can see the point on both sides, but as a player, I wanted to be able to have the right to take the catcher out at the plate. But, you know, if I'm going way out of line, then the umpire ought to have the right to say, you know what, you're out of the game, you're kicked out, and, you know, no run scored. And I think too many of the judgments on the field are happening to, you know, soften the game a little bit.
You know, that's the best suggestion I've heard from anybody, what you just said. It should be left up to the umpire if it was a dirty play or not. Similar to the NBA, it could be an automatic double technical how they throw guys out. It could be the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and there's a process with the union in baseball. And, you know, I got thrown out of the game, and they want to suspend me for a couple games. So you go the next day, you know, you go talk to you have an arbitrary hearing where you have a mediator which can talk to the Major League Baseball, and then you talk to the union, and you all decide on how you negotiate the penalty. But I think the umpires ought to have a right to at least get to that stage where if a guy goes out of whack, he ought to get kicked out and suspended for playing dirty.
Jeff Kent is our guest. All right, final question, Jeff, and I got to ask you this because you were a veteran at the time when a lot of these young Dodgers were coming up, and one that has stayed his entire career with the team will be entering his 11th season with the Dodgers is Andre Ethier. When you were playing with him and he was just coming up, could you ever have predicted he would have been with the Dodgers 11 years later and be as successful as he's been?
Well, I have to toot my own horn and say I did. Somebody asked me point blank before I left, you know, if between the Andre Ethier and Matt Kemp, who do you think would have, a more of a staying power? Who do you think would be the most consistent baseball player? And I said Andre Ethier. I thought he had a good head on his shoulders. I think he was talented. He worked hard. He cared about the game. He played the game, similar to the way that I played the game. He was kind of a hothead too at times. So I remember that because I'm proud to see that he's done, so well in such a long span. I know there's been a lot of talk about his roster spot to maybe a while back about, you know, salary, going to trade him or Matt or, you know, they had four or five outfielders at one time, but Andre's been able to stick there and stick it out, and, I'm proud for him.
You know, it's so ironic. He doesn't say it as publicly as you used to, but some of the things that you used to, younger players used to bug you about kind of bugs him now. So I think it's kind of funny when he says something to me. I'd be like, I heard that before about 10, 11 years ago, and now it's funny you're saying it.
It comes full circle. I know I pissed a lot of old guys off too when I was young. Hopefully you learn from the old guys, and hopefully, he's been able to, you know, not only voice his opinion, but teach a little bit too. And the Dodgers have done a great job of piecing some players together, some young players. I've been watching them because I was proud to be a Dodger when I played there for a while. And I know a lot of personnel there still. And I'm pulling for the Dodgers, except for when they're playing the Giants.
Jeff, hopefully we meet each other in person in spring training. Thanks so much for coming on, and I love talking baseball with you. And hopefully next time we do this, you'll be going to Cooperstown.
Yeah, we'll keep the talk up. I appreciate it, and good luck with your show out there.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Jeff Kent, our guest, and really gave us a lot of time, almost 20 minutes of his time. This guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and I'm curious, after hearing that conversation and hearing the way he talks about himself, talks about the era he played in. Have we changed your mind that he deserves more than 15% of the vote and, at the very least, more consideration to be in the Hall of Fame? 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. More Dodger talk next.
This is the home of the Dodgers.
Call us, tweet us, tag us. It's 866-987-2570 or hashtag Dodger Talk.
David Vasse, Nissan Dodger Talk until 8 o'clock tonight. 866-987-2570 is the phone number. Thanks again to Jeff Kent for his time. It was a great interview. He was honest and really did not hold back as Jeff Kent does. And when he used to do those interviews as a Dodger, as a player, he never really held back and appreciate his time. He was more than generous with it. And if you missed any of the conversation, you could podcast it after 8 o'clock tonight at AM 570 LA Sports. Let's go out to the phones. Let's go out to Matthew in LA. Your thoughts on what Jeff had to say, and are you a believer that he should be in the Hall of Fame?
Yes, number one, great interview. Number two, most definitely I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. And I heard your take earlier on Petros and money, and I have to tell you, and I'm a Giants fan, so let me get that out of the way. But your take on Jeff Kent was dead on. And I've been in that same place and had that same frustration, if you will, of having people just pile on why he shouldn't get in, both Giants and Dodgers fans. And it's kind of like a frustrating conversation because I'm not sure there's another guy in baseball who has the, you know, any position that whoever has the most homers in that position, this is just one stat, we could go deeper, I believe is in the Hall of Fame or at least should be considered to be in the Hall of Fame at a higher rate than 15%.
Yeah, I know. That's what's so crazy. I'm not saying he should be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Exactly.
But how about examine his career a little bit more? Thanks for the phone call, Matthew. And for a nine-year stretch, the first year he got to the Giants until about 2006, Jeff Kent averaged 28 home runs and 110 RBIs. It's a long period of time to be at your peak. Let's go out to Gardena. Manny, you're on Dodger Talk with David Vass. Say hi, Manny.
Yeah, Bear in a Burbank. That may have been your best effort yet. First off, what a coup to get the surly Jeff Kent. And then all the candor that you brought out of him for pulling the likes of guys like Freddie McGriff, the crime dog, and old Roger Clemens. Now, on one thing I do disagree with, he's definitely a Hall of Famer. Like the Giant fan made the point. Due to anybody with the most homers at a position, that's an automatic Hall of Fame bid in my eyes. Now, second, that was a grinder. He was an NL MVP, if I remember right, but he's kind of got to give a little more gap to old Barroyd Bonds, because like him or hate him, a lot of those numbers came because he was Barry's protection. And we know that when people were freaking putting Barry Bonds on first with the bases loaded, and that was the smart move, I mean, that's a little something. In my opinion, both of them should be Hall of Famers, but, Jeff Kent, he was definitely an integrity guy, and there's no question that dude never took the spike. Hey, great job, DV.
All right, thanks, Manny. Appreciate it. Let's go out to Arcadia. Dan, what are your thoughts on Jeff Kent?
Well, Jeff Kent should be in the Hall of Fame. I think part of the reason he isn't is he made a lot of writers mad during the time that he was playing, and I think they still hold that against him, and they don't just look at statistics. They think of him as the person who was a tough interview.
Well, that shouldn't come into play.
I know, but that's kind of the way it is. You know, people kind of hold grudges.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's part of the problem, and listen, I didn't need to ask him about that. I think that's already understood. But, you know, if you look at the pool of writers, there's almost 500 voters now and a lot of new ones coming in every year. How many of them really dealt with Jeff Kent on a day-to-day basis? And how many times did some of these voters deal with him multiple times? Obviously, he had the reputation, but you can't take away what he did on the field and what he meant to those Giants teams and what he meant to those Dodger teams who, until they got Manny Ramirez and Kemp and Ethier came up, he really didn't have much protection. He was the offense, him and Nomar and J.D. Drew, I guess, to some degree. He was the offense. And when he was with Houston, there was a period of time there where he was the guy as well. Let's go out to Malibu. Nick, you're on Dodger Talk with David Vasse. Hi, Nick.
Hey, amazing interview. I just want to say I've been a Dodger fan for forever. And, you know, I still see Jeff Kent. He was, you know, a giant, you know. But I never was a fan with his comments that he had about Vin Scully. He kind of put me a bad taste in my mouth. But putting that aside, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. He was an amazing player, even his time with the Dodgers. I mean, being the all-time home run leader for second baseman, you can't deny that. And with the PED stuff, people with the speculation, they put guys like Mike Piazza and Frank Thomas who have the same kind of thing, and they're putting them in the Hall of Fame. So I believe that Jeff Kent should be in there also.
Hey, Nick, it's funny you brought that up. Somebody sent me that article, and I do remember it after rereading it. I don't think what Jeff said obviously did not rub the right people the right way about Vin Scully, and maybe he would take it back. But I think what he was trying to do was to lead the writer on to believe that Manny Ramirez was on PEDs, and that's why he was not going to give any credit to what he was doing, and he was right.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right.
After I reread it this morning, and knowing what we know now, and thanks for the phone call, I think that was exactly what he was doing. Without coming out and accusing Manny, he basically was taking issue with a guy that he felt was a PED user getting credit for Jeff Kent hitting the ball well when he had done it for the majority of his career. And you can understand why he would take exception with that. Ronnie, we have enough time for another call. One more call. Let's go out to Santa Fe Springs. Rigo, you're on Dodger Talk.
Hey, David, I just wanted to share a quick story about Jeff Kent. You know, I don't think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. He was a terrific player, but he just wasn't very friendly with the fans. Remember one time we're standing outside the clubhouse, and a bunch of, like, little kids were asking for his autograph.
Rigo, can I stop you really quick? We're short on time, and I think you said the point of your story. I don't think that plays into whether or not he should get in the Hall of Fame.
I disagree. I mean, he just didn't, you know, it just rubbed the fans kind of the wrong way.
That's your experience, and maybe somebody had a better experience with him.
Could be.
Yeah, so I don't think you could judge whether or not a guy gets into the Hall of Fame. And I've always said this to all the players. You could sign 100 autographs for 2 hours, and that guy that is the one that doesn't get it, 101st guy in line, is going to be upset, and he's going to tell everybody how big of a jerk you are. In a lot of cases, these athletes are in a no-win situation. You could have a great experience with them. Somebody else might not, and all of a sudden they're a bad guy. So that really does not stick with me. We're going to take a timeout. We went long with Jeff Kent, so we're going to take a quick break, right? Or we're going to keep it. We'll keep it. All right. Sorry, Ronnie. I thought we were going to break. All right, we have time for another call then. Let's go out to Buena Park. Isabel, what's up?
Okay, well, hey, listen, I love the interview with Jeff Kent. I always felt that he deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. So hopefully you can get Kenny Jansen next week. I want to talk to him, David. So.
All right, Isabel, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. 866-987-2570 is the phone number, pound blue, for our AT&T subscribers. Not that I have a vote, but if I did, these would be the eight that I would vote for in this year's Hall of Fame class. And none of them have a closer in it because I'm not really sure how I feel about it right now as far as closers go in the modern era. Trevor Hoffman, a great guy, great closer. But I'm being honest. I don't know how I feel about it. So that's why they're not on my ballot, Hoffman or Billy Wagner. Who is on my ballot is Tim Raines. And part of the reason why is he was the Ricky Henderson of the National League. And if you look at his numbers, it backs it all up. They have very similar numbers. Obviously, Ricky was a more prolific base dealer. He's the greatest of all time. But Tim Raines was the Ricky Henderson of the National League at the same time. Also, too, when I poll his peers that played with and against Tim Raines, they all say he should be in the Hall of Fame. So that's why I have Tim Raines in there. Mike Messina has similar numbers that Jim Palmer has. And I would say Mike Messina pitched at a more difficult time to get guys out in the AL East against hitters that were on PED. So that's why I have those two on. Jeff Kent, Gary Sheffield, who I feel should be a Hall of Famer as well. Vladimir Guerrero, who is a first-time Hall of Famer, if I ever saw one. I don't know if he should get 99% of the vote like Alex Rodriguez did, but Vlad should be in the Hall of Fame. I'm going Bonds and Clemens because they are the two greatest players of their generation. Bonds goes without saying. You could recognize him as the all-time home run leader or don't. It doesn't matter to me. He is still one of the greatest of all time. Roger Clemens, same thing. The only thing about Clemens that may give you more pause than Bonds is that his career took a major dip at a time when usually pitchers at that age do start to have a decline. He all of a sudden got rejuvenated and became dominant again. That's the only reason why I say maybe the numbers are a little inflated because of that. But for me, baseball is entertainment. Those two guys were the best. And when you talk about an even playing field, who's to say, and there's a great example, you could pull it up on YouTube right now. There's a matchup between Eric Gagne and Barry Bonds in a Dodger-Giant game. We all know Gagne was on PEDs and was named in the Mitchell Report. Bonds, obviously, same thing, which goes to my greatest argument, is to people that say it wasn't an even playing field. Well, who's to say whoever was pitching to Bonds wasn't on PEDs? Whoever Clemens was facing wasn't on PEDs. So that's my argument to those people. Who are you to know who was on it and who wasn't at that period of time? And I think that's part of the reason why there is so much debate and really so many gray areas. So the one thing I say is either you accept that and you vote consistently or you don't. And I know there's a lot of new voters that are voting for Bonds and Clemens. And maybe as time goes on, those people don't care as much. So we'll see how it plays out. Obviously, you could hear the laryngitis still playing a little toys with my voices. So we're going to call it a night on Dodger Talk. We're out of time. Thanks to Jeff Kent for coming on the show. If you missed that interview, you could podcast it at AM570LASports.com. Also, too, I'll tweet out a link to the interview at @TheReal_DV. Hope you guys have a great weekend. We will be back with you on Monday night right here on AM570 LA Sports. Have a great night. See ya.